So I was a PhD student in Bob's lab for the past 5 or so years, and what I wanted to talk about today was a project that I worked on in collaboration with Bob for pretty much the duration of my time at Maryland. So this project represents a shared interest of ours in the role of competition in the ecology of plant feeding insects. And this topic has been one that was a long-standing interest of Bob's and something that I became interested in when I first joined the lab. And I think one of the reasons that this issue of competition in general, not just in insects, has been one that ecologists have been fascinated in, because it has a very long and a very controversial history. And of all the taxonomic groups that have been pursued in this regard, and of all trophic levels that this has been examined at, the controversy specifically involving phytophagous insects has probably been greater than in any other group of organisms. So what I wanted to do first was highlight some of the more influential arguments in a historical context, both in favor of and against the role that competition plays for plant-feeding insects. So in terms of the pro-competition arguments, insects provide some of the best cases of resource partitioning, both spatially and temporally. And this is something that Joseph Connell referred to as the ghost of competition past. So in other words, present-day insect distribution patterns are evidence of competition that occurred previously, meaning that insects tend to avoid one another in space and in time as an adaptation to avoid competing with one another. And in terms of spatial partitioning, this occurs at a very broad spatial scale, meaning that some insects feed above ground on leaves, some feed below ground on roots, but even at very fine spatial scales, if you look closely enough, you typically find partitioning. And this is a classic example of that. These are Erythronura leafhoppers feeding on sycamore trees. Even within a leaf, if you look closely enough, some species feed close to the edge of the leaf vein, others will feed more distally away from the vein of the leaf. This also occurs on temporal scales, and this is a good example of that. These are 5 leafhopper species associated with the grass Holcus mollis. So if you look over the course of this 5-month growing season and look at the phenologies of these 5 species, they almost perfectly displace one another in time in terms of when each species emerges and when they peak in abundance. So patterns like these are at least suggestive that competitive dynamics may be driving the ecology of plant-feeding insects. Now, in terms of the anti-competition arguments, probably the most influential paper was this one here by Hairston, Smith, and Slobodkin, 1960, widely referred to as the world is green hypothesis. And it takes a very exploitative view of the world, which means that two species can compete for a common resource if one of the two is more efficient at extracting that resource. And Hairston and colleagues, they make the point that, insects aren't very good examples of that, at least herbivorous insects. And they point to the fact that insects only reduce terrestrial plant biomass somewhere in the range of 5 to 15%. So what that means is that 85 to 95% of green plant material or insect food goes unutilized. It goes directly into the detrital food chain. And patterns like this are extremely inconsistent with competitive models that are largely based on resource removal and exploitation. So the second mechanistic form of competition in ecology that's often cited is called interference competition, which states the two species can also compete if one of the two actively interferes with the other's ability to extract that shared resource. And again, herbivorous insects are very bad examples of this in general. And this was a good point that Don Strong made in the early 1980s, working on these leaf-rolling hispine beetles that occur on heliconia plants in the tropics. Multiple species will co-occur in the same leaf roll, and there have never been observed cases of aggression between species, leading to this term here, a harmonious coexistence, to describe these beetles and insects in general on plant, that they live in harmony and you rarely engage in these direct aggressive type encounters. So, and obviously there were many more arguments that were important in this context. These were some of the more important. And then, as Debbie mentioned, this paper in 1995 that Bob wrote in collaboration with Mark McClure and Jim Ott was really a critical point in this field. So, and as Debbie also mentioned, it's been cited well over 250 times. And it's been extremely important in shaping current studies on both classic forms of competition, as well as more emerging fields of things like plant-mediated interactions and induced resistance. And the basic premise of this paper is that it was the first one to actually take all of the literature, review it, and provide some quantitative assessment of the importance of competition in phytophagous insects, and they found very good evidence that it is an important factor for the ecology of herbivores. So fast forward 10 or 15 more years, when I first started my PhD, Bob was very encouraging to revisit this issue. And at first I was a little hesitant because why revisit a classic? There were two reasons that we really came up with for revisiting the topic. The first one is that this is 1995 and annual reviews take 3 or 4 years to come out. So most of the literature in this paper was from the 1970s, the 1980s, and a little bit of the early 1990s. The problem with that is in the past 15 or so years, the literature base has grown dramatically, and it's also changed in its nature. So many of the early, or much of the early work in the 70s and 80s on competition tended to emphasize these more pairwise direct interactions between species and emphasize these more classic modes of competition. But if you look at more recent literature, this is what you tend to find. Many cases of indirect interactions between species mediated by higher and lower trophic levels. So in the case of predator or parasitoid mediated indirect effects, this is referred to as apparent competition. And when plants mediate indirect interactions, this often occurs via induced resistance. So that was sort of one justification for revisiting this topic. The second was that in 1995, that review sort of happened right before the advent of meta-analysis in ecology. So many current reviews of any given topic perform what's called a meta-analysis, which is a much more rigorous way of assessing your hypotheses. So this is what we did. We put together 145 published studies on the topic, some of which were included in the earlier review, many of which are more recent, that led to 334 total observations of different interspecific species pairs. And for each one of these, we calculated what's called an effect size. In this case, we used the effect size metric Hedges D for each pairwise interaction. And I don't want to spend a lot of time on what an effect size is, but since all the rest of my slides are effect size figures, I just want to spend a moment to explain this a little bit. So this is the formula of how you calculate an effect size. There are three variables that go into this. One is the difference between the control and the experimental groups, the pooled standard deviation, and this J factor that accounts for small sample size bias. And in general, we use a scale where an effect size less than 0.3 is considered to be relatively small, greater than 0.7 is considered to be large. And I put up these two, these are just data that I made up, hypothetical examples to demonstrate what this means. So this is an example of a study that I might have scored. So this is looking at the body size and the performance of this focal aphid here when reared alone versus when it's reared with this competing aphid species. Now, in both of these cases, when you add a competitor, the performance of the focal species declines, but in this case on the left here, you have a fairly small difference between the means, large error bars, that leads to a fairly puny or small negative effect size. This case here, you have large difference, small error bars, leads to a large negative effect size. So it's pretty intuitive what these numbers mean, at least relative to one another. And then the response variables that we measured in this analysis was included aspects of preference, opposition and feeding, performance, mostly fecundity size and survival, and abundance. And there were two primary objectives of the analysis. So the first was simply to ask, is competition an important factor in the ecology of phytophagous insects? And the second objective was to use this big database of effect sizes that we generated to ask whether phytophagous insects conform to traditional competition paradigms. And I'll talk a lot more about what I mean by that in a little bit. Okay, so this is one of the response variables. This is abundance. On the next slide, I'll present all of the data up at once. But just to orient you to how these figures are situated. On the y-axis of all the figures is the effect size. An effect size of zero, where the dashed line is, means no effect, meaning you add a competing species and there's no change, in this case, in the abundance of the focal herbivore. Positive effect sizes are indicative of facilitation or positive interactions between species, and negative effect sizes here are indicative of competitive dynamics. So each one of these points is a different species pair, its effect size, and its associated variance. And this D++ value here is the cumulative effect size, or the mean of all observations and its associated sample size. So these are all eight responses. It's kind of the full data set of all effect sizes. And I don't want to run through each one of them one by one, but just to point out a couple of the more common features to all of the responses. The first is the shape of many of these. They take on this sigmoidal shape where you have a small fraction of studies that document intense competition, and then that levels off, and then you get this small fraction that document facilitation or positive interactions. I think that's one first important point. You typically think of species either competing or not, but there's actually fairly good evidence in the literature that positive interactions are also important. The second is that in spite of facilitation, all of these, if you look at the cumulative effect size on all of these responses, they're all negative and they're all significantly less than zero. So in spite of facilitation sort of watering out or diluting these the overall effect sizes, there's still very good evidence that overall insects do compete for resources for all aspects of performance, preference, as well as abundance. So in terms of the first question, which is the easier one, is competition an important factor? There is good evidence in the literature that it is a very important factor for plant feeding insects. And the second objective was to test whether insects conform to traditional competition paradigms. So, and I should say that these paradigms are not unique to insects. These are general paradigms that we typically cite in ecology of how competition should occur. So I'll run through these one by one. So the first prediction is that the intensity of competition should be proportional to the quantity of resources removed. In this case, we're talking about defoliation. And this analysis was only for defoliators because it's almost impossible to assess resource removal with sap feeders. So this is the predicted relationship given this prediction here. So on the x-axis is defoliation by the potentially competing species. So you're going from zero up to 100% leaf damage or defoliation. And on the y-axis is the performance of the focal herbivore. So that the more that your competitor eats, the greater the negative effect on you. Okay, now these are the data. So there's no relationship between the two. So basically what's happening is that we're getting points here and here that we did not expect or that you would not expect. So what that means is that at fairly low levels of leaf damage from 5 to 25%, we're getting much stronger competitive effects than we would otherwise expect. Most of these studies are examples of induced resistance, meaning that even at low levels of leaf damage, you often find systemic increases in secondary chemicals and other resistance traits that can affect other species. And at very high levels of defoliation, we're finding cases of facilitation or positive interaction. There's a number of reasons to explain this. Leaf reflush is one of them. When you have heavy defoliation, you often get younger, more nitrogen-rich and tender leaves that benefits other species. So in terms of the first prediction, there's not good support for this in the literature for plant-feeding insects. Okay, the second prediction is that intra-guild interactions are stronger than inter-guild interactions. And this is a quote I stole from Eric Pianka's evolutionary ecology text and states that in competitive communities, guilds represent arenas with the potential for intense competition with strong interactions within guilds, but weaker interactions with the remainder of the community. So with plant-feeding insects, you typically distinguish between chewing insects and sap-feeding insects in terms of their feeding guild. So based on this prediction, you would expect that chewing insects should compete fairly strongly. Sap feeders like aphids and plant hoppers should compete fairly strongly. But the cross-guild effects of chewers and sap feeders should be comparatively weak. So we used the big database of effect sizes. We classified each pairwise interaction according to their feeding guild and tested this prediction. Okay, so there'll be two categories. Intra-guild is any combination of chewer-chewer or sap feeder. Inter-guild is the cross-guild effect of chewer and sap feeder. Given this prediction, this is what all the figures should look like. So a strong competitive effect for the intra-guild, a weaker for the inter-guild. And these are the six response variables that we had enough data to test this prediction with. For none of these six responses is there a significant difference between the two groups. And in fact, for most of these, the two effect sizes are almost identical, and they're fairly well replicated too. So overall, there's very poor support for this prediction in the literature, suggesting that caterpillars compete with aphids just as strongly as they do with other chewers. Okay, this third prediction, and this is a very old prediction, that closely related species compete more intensely than distantly related ones. So we classified each pairwise interaction according to whether they fit in one of these four categories. The genus category, these are congeners, so this is as closely related as you can get. These are two aphids that are both in the genus Mysis, for example. So under this category, you should find a very strong competitive effect. Next one out is family. These are confamilial pairs, but they're not congeners. So they're in the two aphids that are both in the family Aphididae, but they're one's in Mysis and one's in aphids. So slightly less related, you should get a slightly weaker competitive effect, and so on and so forth. So as you move out, you should get this sort of stepwise pattern of slightly weaker competitive effects until you get to this class category. And we separately analyzed the chewers and sap feeders so we weren't confounding feeding guild with relatedness. Now for the chewers, there's no difference between these four bars here, which suggests that congeners compete just as strongly as, say, caterpillars and beetles do. So there's no signature of relatedness on the competitive strength of chewers. For sap feeders, you do get a significant effect, and it's the congener effect that's by far the strongest, but then you get this dampening off afterwards. Not exactly the stepwise pattern, but some support for this. So some mixed support for this relationship, especially for sap-feeding insects. Okay, prediction four is that resource partitioning dampens the impact of competition. So the general idea is that insects should compete very strongly if they co-occur in time and space, but if you see any divergence, you should see a much weaker competitive effect. So again, we classified the insects according to whether there was no separation. This means same time, same place, we should see a large negative effect size. And then if you get any type of divergence, meaning spatial, different parts of the planet at the same time, or temporal separation, meaning they're on different, on the same plant part, but different times of the year, or any combination of those two, which is this hatched bar here, you should see a much weaker effect compared to when they co-occur at the same time and place. Okay, so these are the five response variables that we tested this with. Growth rate and survival, two out of the five, there was no significant difference between those four categories. But for three of the five, fecundity, abundance, and body size, there was a significant effect. But the only one that really fits this expected pattern, given this prediction, is for fecundity, where you do see strong competition when they co-occur, but you see it just this dampening off when you get any form of spatial or temporal separation. So if you look at the overall pool of data, there's pretty poor support for this prediction, which suggests that insects can compete despite spatial and temporal partitioning of their resources. Okay, and then the last prediction just deals with symmetry. You generally expect that organisms under competition will engage in this symmetrical encounter for resources. So what we did was we took each interspecific pair and classified them according to who was the dominant competitor and stacked them accordingly. If there's no difference and it's perfectly symmetrical, then it shouldn't matter. In other words, the two groups should be exactly equal. But this is what the data looked like. So these are the five response variables that we tested this with. We found that there was a lot of asymmetry in the data set. Yeah. In some cases, the dominant competitor was significantly, but not hugely stronger than the reciprocal effect. In some cases, it was only a one-way effect, where the dominant competitor had an effect, but there was no reciprocal effect. The interesting part about this, too, is that this is an inherent asymmetry, meaning that these studies tested the effect of one-on-two and two-on-one, so it was an inherent degree of asymmetry in the interactions. Okay, so just to briefly summarize all of those results, we found very good evidence that insects do compete, but they don't seem to conform with many of our expectations of how competition should occur. So this is kind of an explanation of what exactly is happening. We classified the data set according to whether it provided evidence for competition or facilitation. We also classified it according to whether it provided support for one of these four mechanistic models. So you have interference and exploitative, your more classic models of competition. Then you have what we're calling plant-mediated or enemy-mediated, so any indirect effect mediated by lower or higher trophic levels. And the main point to get out of this is that if you look at these more classic forms, there's fairly poor support in the literature for interference and exploitative competition, which are often cited in ecology, but the vast majority of evidence in the literature suggests that indirect effects through plants and natural enemies mediate interactions among herbivores, which potentially explains why we don't see concordance with these theoretical expectations that are largely based on these two classic models here. So just to summarize, interactions among insect herbivores are largely asymmetrical. They can occur at low densities in between distantly related individuals in divergent feeding gills that are separated in both time and space. Plants and natural enemies often mediate these indirect interactions, and that's what we think is resulting in this massive violation of classic competition theory. So this traditional paradigm of looking at competition sort of in a black box and not considering higher and lower trophic levels seems to be slowly being replaced by this more emerging paradigm that explicitly considers predation effects as well as things like induced resistance. Effects are often indirect and can be both positive as well as negative. So it's a bit more complicated, this scenario here, but it certainly appears to be a more accurate depiction of how real-world communities occur. And then I can't really take credit for any of the work because I basically sort of did the grunt work on the analysis and scored the papers, but these are kind of Bob's ideas and thoughts. And I think this is the kind of things that he was thinking about when he was devacking and hiking around. But I don't know. Maybe he was thinking about American Idol or whatever. But I think these are the kinds of things, thoughts that have been going through his head for the past 20 or so years. And Bob had such a big influence on insect ecology in general. It's difficult to isolate one thing, but I think this is a major one of his more important contributions. And I can speak for myself is that it had a huge impact on how I think of insect ecology and the direction of my own research. And I think that's true for a lot of other people as well. And I feel just really lucky that I was able to be a part of all this. And I played some small role in helping Bob to articulate this grand vision of insect ecology. So thanks. finished with 5 seconds, so.